This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. I hope you know already that you're required to recycle in Vermont. Vermont passed a universal recycling law several years ago, and it's being phased in over time. Last year, all regular Joes in Vermont fell under the new requirement that recyclable materials like plastic, metal, and glass need to be kept out of the trash and put in the recycling bin. Well, this year, a new part of the law goes into effect. Starting on July 1st, you can no longer throw leaf and yard debris into the waste stream. The good news, if that seems onerous, is that trash haulers around the state are required to pick up that kind of material in addition to recycling and trash. And if you take your garbage and recycling to a transfer station like I do, you'll see that the receptacles are probably already there for compost and yard waste. But since some of this stuff is news to some of you and it can get fairly complicated, we're going to spend some time on recycling and waste in Vermont today. And we particularly want to know if you have questions like, how do I know what plastics I can recycle? What do those numbers mean on the bottom of the plastic container? Can I recycle pill bottles? What exactly am I supposed to do with all of those leaves I plan to rake up in the fall? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can pop a question up on the Vermont Edition show page at vpr.net. I'm joined today by Josh Kelly, Materials Management Section Chief of the Solid Waste Program at the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources. Josh, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And by Dan Goosen, General Manager of Green Mountain Compost. Hi, Dan. Nice to have you here.
Good to be here.
All right, Josh. So tell us what exactly is happening on July 1st.
Yeah. So we all know that recyclables were required to be separated out and recycled as of last summer. And this summer we have the disposal ban on leaf and yard debris and actually clean wood as well. And so what those things are is really your leaves, your grass clippings, brush. And then for clean wood, it's limbs, it's logs and lumber. Clean
okay.
lumber, untreated, unpainted lumber.
How many people were actually throwing things like lumber into the trash anyway?
It doesn't make up a very significant portion of the waste stream. So in terms of how much of a change is this, it's probably not drastic for most of the state. It's a small portion of the organic material that's going into our trash and into our landfills. But it's definitely something that doesn't provide any benefit there. It does create, especially in the case of leaves or grass, greenhouse gas emissions as it decomposes in the landfill, releasing methane. And as Dan will tell you a little bit later, there's much more beneficial uses for this material.
Well, so Dan, do you expect to see an uptick then in your business from people trying to figure out new plans for yard debris and garden waste?
Yeah, it's a good question. We don't expect to see a huge uptick in that realm. We have been seeing it in food, which we can talk about separately, but the leaf and yard debris has been banned from Chittenden County disposal, landfill disposal, for almost 25 years now. Chittenden County is a little bit different than the rest of the state when it comes to recycling and what we've done with our trash. Been ahead of the curve in many respects. We also have the population density that allows for maybe more efficient collection or drop-off of similar materials. And so we've been seeing at Green Mountain Compost, and formerly Intervale Compost, we've been accepting we've been accepting leaf and yard debris from Chittenden County for, almost 30 years. And it's been banned from the landfill since 1993 in Chittenden County, Addison County as well. The rest of the state, they're catching up a little bit in that respect, but Chittenden County being as urban as it is, it's been more of an issue for a longer period of time. In much of the state, people rake up leaves and they put them in the backyard or they put them, on the edge of the property. It's not something that's necessarily gone into the trash. And so to answer your question, yeah, we don't expect to see a huge uptick. We do receive a lot, but not expecting to see a lot more.
And in terms of advice for people, Josh, I mean, you don't have to send it to Green Mountain Compost or give it to your transfer station. You've got tips for people who want to do something with their yard waste and their sort of yard debris and wood. What else can people do? I mean, I can think of a bunch of things. You can probably burn it if you get a burn permit. Mm-hmm. You can mow up your leaves and mm-hmm. use them as sort of ground cover in the fall. What else do people do?
Yeah, absolutely. Dan and I always are talking about really managing these in place if you can. Certainly, Chittenden Solid Waste District encourages people to mow their grass clippings in with a mulching mower. My neighbor mows her leaves in. I get a few of her leaves in my lawn, but very few. She's mainly got the bigger tree. She mows them in every fall. And that's really a way to not have to have any cost or expense or hassle in managing them. And it's better for the soil in general. So.
And you're okay with that, Dan?
Yeah, that's fine. You know, we accept them. We welcome all leaf and yard debris into our facility coming from Chittenden County. And the reason it's good for us is because it's full of nutrients. But we recognize that those nutrients really probably belong in the soil where they've fallen, you know, either as a leaf or a blade of grass. And so, yeah, we highly encourage people to leave them in place for whatever means are necessary. That's not a solution for everyone, though, if you're in a condominium or in a small place where there's no on-site composting or no place to dispose of them per se, then we will happily take them.
And do you take wood too? I mean, we just chopped down a tree. If we wanted to, instead of leaving the snags for the birds, if we wanted to take it to you, could we do that?
It's a good question. We don't take wood per se. We're part of CSWD, Chittenden Solid Waste District, and they have here in Chittenden County. Again, things are a little bit different. There's 7 drop-off centers throughout the county where you can take all sorts of recyclables and organics and trash. They accept wood at 6 of the 7. There are other areas where they can be brought as well. We don't currently take wood bigger than, say, a pinky size or a quarter inch in diameter at our place, just because it doesn't break down readily enough in our process to be useful. And so it would need to be ground up, and currently we don't have the facilities to do that on site.
All right, so that's a lot of work with the chainsaw if I'm going to take it to you.
That's true.
We're talking about recycling today. We're looking at some changes, some new things being phased in the new universal recycling law. And we're going to take your questions and emails, phone calls about things that have confused you about waste, about composting. Maybe you need some advice. Maybe you have questions about recycling. We often get that one about what size does it have to be, the little plastic bottles and pieces of plastic, before I can put them in the recycling bin? Can I throw away plastic that is not firm, not hard, that kind of stuff? So if you have questions, we're happy to answer them for you today. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Josh, you mentioned that yard waste and food waste, which is coming in a couple of years in terms of trying to get that out of the waste stream, doesn't really have a place in the landfill. But I want to play you a bite that I collected last year, last fall. I got a tour from Joe Gay, who's an engineer with Casella Waste Systems, which owns and operates the only landfill that's currently operating in the state of Vermont up in Coventry. And the landfill there operates an energy plant that runs on methane gas that's produced by the decomposition of materials in the landfill. And Gay told me that the landfill operators are actually a little bit concerned about some of the new phases of the recycling bill that are going to divert organic material away from the waste stream. Here's what he told me.
We will start to see a loss of production of landfill gas by taking the organics out of the waste stream. That is the primary component by which the landfill gas is generating methane. And long term, I think we probably will not realize as much gas production as we had initially expected and hoped for, you know, for the energy plant.
So, Josh Kelly, if this stuff is actually breaking down in the landfill and aiding in the decomposition and then being used by the landfill to produce energy, why isn't it okay to have it in there?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. First, let's talk about what is in organics in a landfill. You've got everything from the toilet paper and the tissue and actually more so than toilet paper, but paper towels that are part of organic material because paper is made from wood. You have some leaf and yard debris, but very little, as we discussed. And then you have quite a bit of food waste. When you look at the components of the organic stream, the food waste is the largest part of that. Largest part of that in terms of our general residential municipal solid waste. The landfill also takes in sludge, septage, that has been sort of dewatered at our wastewater treatment plants. And that has also methane sort of releasing qualities to it. It is terrific that our landfills have waste cap or methane capture, often called waste to energy, and there is a likelihood of some of that decreasing with the decrease in the food waste going into the landfill. But what you're losing is you're never able to use the other nutrients in that food waste. You're just getting the methane off of it. In addition, generally speaking, a landfill is built by cells. These cells are about the size of a soccer field. Sometimes they're as deep as 40 feet. And they're not capped and pulled – they don't pull the methane off for anywhere from 6 months to a year sometimes. So there's this argument constantly going around in the solid waste field about what's better, to landfill it or to compost it or send it to anaerobic digestion. And generally speaking, it's agreed by most solid waste officials that methane capture in a landfill is beneficial if that's the only option you have. But it is better to capture it through anaerobic digestion because you then have the leftover solids to be used as fertilizer, the digestate as it's called, or to capture it in composting because, again, you get to recapture those nutrients. So you have two things at play. One, the landfill doesn't usually capture methane for 6 months to a year, which that means there's some methane leaching out of our garbage bags that are being sent there with food waste in there. And then after that, they're capturing it, but they don't get the other benefit, the nutrient benefit of returning basically the food that we've extracted from our soil back to our soil.
And Dan Goosen, this is your area of expertise as well, since we're talking now about organic material and what can be done with it. So, you know, weigh in here on your thoughts, because we're all going to be required to be composting our food waste by 2020, even if you're just in a house. Right now, some of the very big food producers are already required to compost, but every one of us is going to have to do it in a couple of years.
That's right. 2020 is the deadline on that, and it's there's some work to be done before we get there for sure. We definitely feel that things like food do not belong in a landfill for some of the reasons Josh mentioned. The soil building is a really important process that isn't happening enough in this country. We've got some great players in the industry here in Vermont, where we've recognized perhaps here longer than other places the importance of diverting this material back into something that we can use to enrich our gardens and our farms and our fields. But yeah, there's the methane. I mean, methane is a really big greenhouse gas that is, you know, far worse than CO2. And as Josh was mentioning, there's always leakage, even in the best systems and landfills. So I understand why landfill operators don't necessarily like to see this stream being diverted out of their, you know, profit center perhaps, but we think that there are much better end uses for it, including what we're doing with composting. And as Josh mentioned, anaerobic digestion plays an important part where you can get the best of both worlds. You still capture all that energy, and yet you can still make a high-quality soil product at the end of it. So we feel like there's a lot of capacity left and a lot of demand for soil products within the state that these materials are better suited for.
All right, we're starting to get some questions, as we knew and hoped we would, about recycling. Amanda asks, since we're on this topic, what are we to do with plants that have blight or other diseases? I was told not to put those into the compost.
Great question. We get that one a lot at our facility. You know, compost, when you talk about compost, people conjure different images in their mind. Most people who have a backyard compost have a small pile that's might be well maintained, might not, might be pretty stinky. Maybe the neighbor's dog comes and visits and steals some stuff out of there from time to time.
Or the neighborhood bear.
Neighborhood bear, depending on where you are, for sure. Generally a raccoon in my neighborhood. But big, large commercial compost facilities handle things very differently. And so we get our materials in massive quantities. They get up to high temperatures really quickly, and they undergo the biological process of breaking down those materials into a soil product very quickly. And so we are able to handle many things that you wouldn't normally see or want in your backyard compost system. So things like bones and milk and dairy and meat, we can handle those without any issue. You know, even stinky, rotten fish, we welcome those at our facility. You don't want any of those generally in your own backyard compost facility for some obvious reasons. Blighted plants, invasive species that, you know, people pulling up knotweed and, you know, some of the other ones that are really noxious and really problematic in our ecosystem, you don't generally want to put those in your backyard compost because they A, have a chance of surviving. You might not get the temperatures high enough. B, if they are spread via spores, You could be endangering not only your garden, but your neighbor's gardens. So there, it is really important to follow some good protocols to take care of them. But bringing them to us is an acceptable protocol for people within, you know, our district here within Chittenden County. In other counties, you might, you know, landfill disposal is probably still a viable option for some of those that if you're trying to reduce late blight that really wiped out all the tomatoes for a number of years in recent history here in Vermont, you don't want those spores out in the environment. So when that sort of material comes into our facility, we ask that they notify us in our office and then we integrate it immediately in our recipes. And again, the biological activity is such that those are pretty much wiped out very, very readily, including things like weed seeds that don't always get knocked down in a backyard composting facility.
So in terms of just logistically speaking for people who are trying to figure out, you know, in an anticipation of this rule change or just because they want to do it already, how to do the composting and whether you have your own backyard compost or you're doing some of that or not, how do you get the rest of the materials or all of your organic materials to a transfer station, or can you do it with your trash hauler, or, you know, how's that all going to work, Josh?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I'd say first, for the things that you can manage at home, it's going to be a really affordable option. And if you have a garden, for your regular food waste and your leaves and your grass clippings, it can be a great way to recycle those materials and have a compost product that you can use at home. Quickly on Dan's mention of meat, with the ban on food waste, residents that compost at home do not need to be composting meat and bones if they compost at home. So those can still go in the trash, even after 2020. So that provides for a solution for residents. However, if you're going to take your food waste to a drop-off, check what they're taking at this drop-off center, at this transfer stations. Find out what type of materials they accept. As Dan mentioned, their Green Mountain compost site takes food waste of all kinds, meat, bones, and most of the other composters in the state do take those as well. With regard to leaf and yard debris and plants that, you know, maybe you have bishop's weed or maybe you have knotweed, which I have and some of my neighbors do, there are ways to manage those at home. You can put them in plastic or a plastic bag or a tarp in the sun and it will kill them after a certain point of time. But I'd say, you know, still incorporating those into your compost pile that's going to go on your garden may not be a good idea. It may be fine after they've been killed to put them back where they came from, meaning the place where you picked them up if they're completely dead. Worst case, you know, it's not going to make it any worse, right? And then check with your transfer station if you do want to bring them somewhere else or their stump dump to see what they accept. Your composters, your transfer stations have different standards, and so it's good to find out what they're taking.
So that can be a little confusing. You know, we're all trying to follow this universal law, and yet they're not universal requirements at every transfer station or with every trash hauler.
Yes, yes. The local solid waste districts, alliances, and towns have just come out with an 802recycles.com website where they all have their contact information. So in one-stop shop, you can find out what solid waste district you're in for your town, what alliance or group you're participating in, and find local information. Each of these solid waste districts is putting up what we call these A to Z lists on all these things, because we could spend 10 shows on just the myriad of things and what you can do with them.
So you'd like that one, new job.
Oh, it's terrific. I love it too. But the A to Z lists are something that are coming from each of these localities because it does change from each region. There are some different variables. So checking in with your local solid waste district makes a lot of sense.
Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about all of this, including, so what kind of enforcement rights does the state have? Are you going to have people going through your trash can in 2020, making sure that you don't have your leftover salad in there? And what are trash haulers and recyclers required to do, allowed to do, getting ready to do? As well as a lot of your questions are coming right in. Keep them coming. You can go to the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're looking at the rules and guidelines surrounding recycling and composting in Vermont. And our guests are answering questions about all of the things that vex us about trash and recycling. I'm talking with Josh Kelly, Materials Management Section Chief for the Solid Waste Program at the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources, and Dan Goosen, General Manager of Green Mountain Compost. And you can ask your question by posting it on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or by calling 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Tony, calling in from Essex Junction. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm calling about composting recycling at small events around. We have a weekly farmers market that I volunteer with, and I've tried to, you know, reduce our waste over the years we've been in, you know, working, and it's just been really hard. Our recycling's always contaminated. We did ban styrofoam a couple of years ago, and we've tried composting, but there's not a lot of food waste. It seems people eat what they buy. It's a Friday evening market, so lots of people come for supper. And I'd love to do some kind of compostable containers, but there's pros and cons as far as, you know, what are they made of? Are they, you know, growing corn to make the containers, and are they environmentally really the best way to go?
Yeah, Tony, thanks for your call. Lots of questions there, but, you know, a good point of how do you reduce waste at events like these, small events and not ones that are necessarily state events, because public places, like state-run public places, have to have recycling bins. But, you know, if you go to your local gas station, for example, they're not required to have a recycling bin because that's a private location. And so these events that are happening maybe in public spaces, maybe not, how do people like Tony get to work on getting less into the waste stream? Dan?
Yeah, some great questions there. And one point of clarification, again, this is a little bit different because the way we handle solid waste in the state is different based on where you are in the state. And so within Chittenden County, we have our own rules that are actually going a little bit step further than what they're doing statewide. And so starting July 1st, not only will it be all public property, will they have to have recycling options next to their trash disposal, but any publicly accessible trash cans within the county of Chittenden County will have that same requirement. So that's just a Chittenden County requirement that doesn't apply to the rest of the state. Hopefully that will become the case eventually. But
So what does that mean, a publicly accessible trash
can? So things like the gas station that you mentioned, if they have a trash can there where, you know, you put your coffee cup or whatever, they should also have a recycling can where you can put your soda can so that it doesn't end up in the landfill. You know, if you think about what goes into those trash cans at gas stations, a lot of it could probably be recycled. So that's what we're aiming to capture more of. And so it is a very confusing landscape. We feel the pain there because like we've said, Chittenden County is different than the rest of the state, and even every solid waste district is a little bit different. But speaking to folks like Tony within our county, we have a pretty robust outreach program as part of Chittenden Solid Waste District, where we have staff hired that are doing exactly the kinds of things that she's talking about. We have a program called Waste Warriors, where staff have been hired to go out and train volunteers throughout the community to actually staff some of these events to help people transition and figure out, A, have the right receptacles, because that's, you know, the starting point. If you've got one trash can, everything's going to go in that can. So figuring out that there's a trash can, a recycling bin, and an organics or compost bin anywhere where that's appropriate, and then making sure that the right materials get into the right receptacles. There are people within CSWD who are going out to all sorts of events, festivals all over the county, including things like farmers markets. So if she hasn't already been in touch, I would greatly encourage her to contact CSWD.
That's Chittenden Solid Waste District,
yep,
in case anybody's...
Solid Waste District. And you know, some of the programs apply just to people in Chittenden County, but there's a wealth of information there that would apply for the rest of the state, even if it's, you know, what is allowed is slightly different in town to town. There's sections on there about compostable plastics, for instance, like she was asking about, which containers are allowed. And again, a little confusion at Green Mountain Compost. We do accept certified compostable plastics. Many compost facilities in the state do not. So it depends on where you are, the answer to that one. But yeah, I would go there. CSWD.net is their website, and 872-8111 is the question line. If you've got burning questions about what to do about compostables, recycling, or anything, try that number. It's a great resource.
And we'll put a link up at vpr.net as well for people. Susan in Weathersfield emailed, say, our town's transfer station only recently stopped accepting any plastic besides type 1. As a result, we must pay to dispose of all other plastics along with all other non-recyclable trash. This seems like a development in the opposite direction from the new law. What can we do to recycle plastics if our town's transfer station no longer accepts it? Josh?
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of those calls recently as a couple of regions of the state have struggled with or really limited their recycling collection services. So I think some down up in Northeast Kingdom and then also down towards Brattleboro have seen some decreases in the numbers of recyclables they can accept. State law only bans plastics 1 and 2, and the reasons that it did that was because of their high value to the recycling markets, their ease of recyclability. But that when people find that they can't recycle 3 through 7 or 5 through 7, they get frustrated because they've cleaned them, they've brought them there, and we completely understand that frustration. The bottom line is that some of these places are rural, and Vermont's markets it's a long journey to get them to market, and so they have less value. And so some of these smaller transfer stations in more rural places have stopped accepting those plastics because they just can't find markets for them.
And especially right now, right, the commodities market for recyclables is quite depressed at the moment.
It is down, but as Tom Moreau stated on VPR not long ago, they're actually seeing as he told us, a higher price per bale for 3 through 5s, I think, because of the polypropylene content and some of those markets. So more value than the plastics 1 and 2, which was surprising. But again, it's all about scale and getting it to those markets and finding those channels. You have to have enough to be able to get it on a truckload. Otherwise, the truck won't even come to you. So these are the struggles we're seeing. We certainly encourage our districts to talk to each other to try and find better avenues for these materials. But there is a shifting change going on in the recycling markets.
Well, speaking of different districts and how it works in different places, let's talk a little bit now with Paul Tomasi, who's executive director of the Northeast Kingdom Waste Management District and is on the line with us. Hi, Paul. Nice to talk with you.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So what's the experience actually been like for the NEK Waste Management District in terms of complying with the state's universal recycling law and phasing in some of these new components?
Well, I think generally speaking, we've been able to comply with most of the components of the law. As Chittenden has, we have programs in place prior to the implementation of Act 148, so we were collecting a lot of the materials. We've been diverting food scraps now for almost 10 years at probably 8 to 10 facilities. They come online at different times. But overall, I think our success has been pretty good. We are rural, obviously. And, that has presented some challenges for us as far as transportation goes. But generally speaking, it's gone very well.
So what does it actually look like for people who are in your waste management district and are, now doing different things or trash haulers who are also working within your district? Can you sort of paint a picture for me?
Yeah. In contrast to some of the more populated areas of the state, we rely more heavily on drop-off facilities. And I think maybe Dan mentioned that they had 7 or 8 facilities in Chittenden County. We cover actually 49 towns spread throughout 5 counties. And so we rely on a network of 28 facilities. And so, and when we say facility, sometimes we're just talking about a shipping container, off a side road somewhere. But, most people in the rural areas are relying upon these drop-off facilities for most of their recycling and organics diversion.
And is it done differently in different places? I mean, you mentioned some of them might just be like a shipping container or like a trash container on the side of the road. So do people in different towns have different abilities to get rid of their yard waste or have to drive, much farther to do that, for example?
Certainly. There are some communities in the Northeast Kingdom that have to drive significant distances just for things like fuel and medical care and food. Some of them have to drive distances for their waste-related services as well. But, we feel like most people have pretty good access to a facility. Now, some of the hours might not be convenient for folks because most of our facilities are only open on Saturdays, but you'll find in larger communities like Lindenville and Derby that they have hours also during the week.
Josh Kelly, I know you wanted to jump in here because you're hoping Paul will talk about something very specific.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Paul about the pay-as-you-throw experience in the Northeast Kingdom.
Yeah, it's been hugely successful here in the Northeast Kingdom. We had, out of our 49 member towns, about a third of them who were still funding trash disposal through taxes. And so one of the requirements of Act 148 was to make sure that people paid for their trash disposal. And so over the course of the last couple of years, we've had 14 towns migrate from tax-funded trash disposal to variable rate pricing or pay-as-you-throw, as it's more typically known.
And that's dependent on however much trash you're actually throwing is what you're paying for, not sort of a set fee for everybody through the taxes.
Yeah, that's correct. And most typically, it's based on a 32-gallon trash bag. So it's, you know, you pay for each bag of trash that you generate. And what we saw in just these 14 towns, which represent about a quarter of our population, a 10% increase in recycling, but more importantly, we saw a 24% decrease in trash generation. And so that's very significant.
So does that actually reduce revenues then as well?
Well, I guess to a certain extent it can, because we do have a tax on trash, but we also collect and market our own recyclables. And so we're able to actually generate revenue through the sale of recycling. And there aren't too many waste districts in Vermont that are in that situation.
Paul Tomasi is Executive Director of the Northeast Kingdom Waste Management District. Paul, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
We're talking about recycling today. We're talking about the new rules in the state going into effect on July 1st that relate to yard waste, yard debris, leaves, things like that. You can't throw them in the trash. You can compost them in place, or you can take them to a transfer station that accepts them or a company that accepts them. If you have a question for us, you can post it at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. We have a couple minutes left, so let's see if we can blast through a bunch of questions fast, because we've got people with a lot of different questions. So let's go to Alan, who's calling in from Ludlow. Hi, Alan. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. I have a question about dog waste, and I know it can be composted, but you shouldn't put it in your garden compost, and I prefer not to throw it in my trash. Are there digesters that can be used to facilitate that process?
Alan, thanks for the question. Dan Goosen?
Yeah, there are some great fairly new digesters, as you refer to them. There's something called a green cone that we have available through our solid waste district. Many solid waste districts in the state provide these at a very low cost, generally at cost. They're a little bit pricier than perhaps a backyard composter, but they work. You bury part of it underground, and you can add things like pet waste and even bones and meat in these scenarios, and they will slowly digest rather than compost perhaps and integrate into the soil and return those nutrients into the soil. So it's a great solution for folks with pets who really feel strongly and want to keep that stuff out of the trash.
And not put it in your neighbor's yard. You shouldn't just toss it over the
I've
fence.
Heard that's done. Yeah, no, we don't encourage that for friendly neighbors. But if you look up either on CSWD's website or Green Mountain Compost website or just Google green cones, you'll find some links to what that looks like.
And June asks, is the measure still 2 inches by 2 inches for plastics? And Josh, maybe you can address this. This is, you know, any plastic that you're going to put in the recycling bin has to be a certain size so it doesn't jam up the machine.
Yes. And it's a two-dimensional thing. I always forget that when I'm sitting there with a lid, I look at the lid and I go, oh, it's the rule of twos, 2 inches by 2 inches in two directions. And that also applies to bigger plastics, like if your kid breaks their little slide that they have in the backyard, the plastic slide, if it's 2 feet or bigger, they don't accept it. So,
2 feet or bigger.
2 feet or bigger. So it's this rule of twos.
Yeah,
in any dimension.
Dimension. So generally, the for plastic lids and smaller plastics, it's the rule of 2 inches in any two dimensions. If it's at least that size, that can go in.
All right. One other question here from Greg, who says, I provide cleaning services for several Vermont businesses, and I can state that none of them have adopted the recycling laws for paper and plastic that took effect last year. Two of these are large corporations. I don't see state-mandated universal recycling as being very effective to date. So, you know, what is the enforcement, Josh? And
yeah, we get that question a lot. And it's a really valid question. I think what we're really in the midst of is rolling out a change across the landscape in terms of how all of us, from businesses to residents to the solid waste service providers, the haulers, the transfer stations, manage materials, how they are recycling and getting ready for and starting to compost. And even actually, I want to just crack the lid on some of the food donation story has been hugely successful. We've seen the Vermont Food Bank has captured about 30% more food recently. So it's a change that's happening slowly, and the state is really focusing our enforcement on ensuring the services are there first. So when the hauler requirement came into effect last summer that they offer recycling services, we have been checking up on haulers to make sure that those services are being provided. We've gotten some complaints from residents who didn't have recycling services, and so we followed up, and the haulers were now providing it. We're going to be doing more of those compliance checks, and I think eventually we'll be getting out to some of those larger businesses. But at the first stage, we're looking at our transfer stations. Are they offering services for recycling? And they all are. And then for haulers, again, with the recycling requirement last summer, we're still on a complaint-driven basis with them.
All right. So we'll check in with you again. We've got more phases to go, so more chances to check in. And we're going to put a link up to frequently asked questions for people who are still wondering about some of the questions they might have on recycling and composting and trash. Josh Kelly is Materials Management Section Chief of the Solid Waste Program at the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources. And Dan Goosen is General Manager of Green Mountain Compost. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming up, VPR's own jazz host Reuben Jackson joins us to talk about the shows he's staying up for or maybe even skipping out of work for at the celebration of music known as Jazz Fest. Stay tuned. You're listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The Burlington Discover Jazz Festival is an annual celebration of summer and music and community in Vermont. This year marks its 33rd year, and there are a ton of great acts and events for music lovers of all stripes. Jazz Fest started on the 3rd, and it runs through the 12th, so if you haven't made plans for the weekend yet, we've got you covered. Here to help us out with some of the highlights still to come is VPR's Friday night jazz host, Reuben Jackson. Hey, Reuben.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, man. It's the what's that song? It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yeah, well, usually that's a different time.
This and football season for me. So,
but Reuben, Jazz Fest is more than halfway through. Are we late to the party here?
Oh no, not at all. I think you know, there are plenty of entrees on the table. I mean, I think one of the wonderful things about Discover Jazz is that it's kind of like an extended work. You know, you might have like the first movement and then you have like the adagio, but it continues. So it's not like you're if there's someone in particular you wanted to see and didn't, that could be maybe a slight bummer. But it's not like the quality diminishes to the point where you think, I should just stay home. So you shouldn't, people. You shouldn't.
You want to tell us about one thing still to come that you're really excited about?
Oh, gosh, one thing. Is this an hour? I'm kidding.
Yeah, we got 3 or 4 hours.
I'll get two in real quick. Medalia, a Vermont-based band, just really – I think versatile and fun and funky and all those good things. As far as like the name acts, Diane Shore, who's a vocalist who's performing with the Count Basie Orchestra on Sunday. You know, it's I think what's happened with jazz confuses people sometimes. It's such a broad you get such a broad array of influence, and I think that's always been the case. But what's that expression? It's a good problem to have. So you can hear traditional things, you can hear more outside things, as people say, and it's I think it's like the best smorgasbord of all,
Well, speaking of things that may not be sort of traditional jazz mm-hmm. or that you may not think you're going to hear at Jazz Fest, let's play a little bit of music and then I want you to talk about this because here's another act that you're really excited
sure.
about. So first we'll hear it and see if people can try to figure out, oh, I know who that probably is. Hang on a minute. We'll hear it.
Come and listen to my story about a man named Jed. Yeah. Poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And one day he was shooting at some food, and up from the ground came a bubbling crude.
Oil, daddy. Black gold. Texas.
All right, so the key here, if you're trying to identify the artist, is not that fabulous singer, but it's that instrument we heard right at the beginning, and it comes back later in the song,
yes.
The banjo. So who are we listening to?
Bella Fleck and the Flecktones, who are playing tonight.
What?
Tonight is the it's Waterfront. Let's call it Waterfront Thursday, but the first tent concert is tonight. So Bella Fleck and the Flecktones have reunited for a brief tour, and fortunately for us, they've come our way, and I consider them genre benders in the best way possible. I was going to say you could also identify this if you're of a certain vintage and you watch the Beverly Hillbillies
well,
on TV
because
you can, you know.
And do you know who that singer is? She's fabulous.
Oh, gosh, I cannot remember her name. No.
All right, well, we're going to put that video that we're hearing from online so people will find out. It's pretty awesome. Ruben, you have sort of told me you're losing sleep so you can get to a lot of these performances. And I'm sorry, maybe I grasped you up there saying maybe you're even leaving work to get to them. I don't think that's true. So
it's just between us, Jane.
Yeah, I'm not trying to shame Ruben. What do you actually love about the Discover Jazz Festival?
Oh, my gosh. It's I'll use a metaphor again. It really is. It's a great indicator of where the music has been, where it's going. As you know, even now, we had kind of a so-so winter. The winter ends, whatever had happened to manifest, and the sound is everywhere. So even if you aren't particularly invested in an artist or artist, walking up and down Church Street and the music is all over the place. Like yesterday it was cool, but there's like a breeze blowing and you have like school bands and you have a lot of the other fabulous musicians here. And what's not to like? It's my winning lotto ticket since I don't play the lotto. And you can just sit there and chase the music or let the music chase you. And what's that, the kids? It's all good. You know?
And you mentioned the school bands. Now, I know a secret about you, which is that you have a very soft heart. And you love those school bands, don't you?
Oh, boy. Oh, man. Oh, man. Smitten. So smitten. Yes. Yes. It's the music, of course, but I think the teacher in me will not die, thankfully. And I love the earnestness. There are some fabulous jazz ensembles in the state of Vermont. And I also love just seeing young artists coming into themselves. So I think no matter what it is, what you're witnessing is seeing what can happen within a collective, like a band. And like yesterday I heard Kern Hatton from Downstate and Middlebury and a bunch of other. And I was crying like a parent. Do you have someone in this band? I said, they're all my kids.
So that's at the very local. But Ruben, I know that you're also jazzed about, and I'm sorry about that pun, but you're jazzed about, a lot of the local acts that perform at Jazz Fest, and we want to play another cut of music. So this one in particular that you're really excited about.
This is a group we were also fortunate to have here as part of the Live at the Fort series, Suleymond. They're a duo, and it's that sea of possibilities again that falls under the jazz umbrella.
Let's hear a little bit. That's getting pretty funky there, Ruben.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you really can hear a little bit of everything if you go, even if you just wander around on Church Street during Jazz Fest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That to me is really one of the joys, and their films. I mean, I hate that cliche, but there is something for everyone. But, I walk up and down Church Street and I think of a line from a song by Bob Marley. One good thing about music, when it hits, you feel no pain, and it's early summer in Vermont. Music, what did Biggie Smalls say? It's all good, baby, baby.
Now, if people are really just going to Jazz Fest so they can catch a glimpse of you, where will they find you in the next few days?
If it's school band time, they can catch me at getting tissue for crying. But I roam around. You know, just look for me. People come up and say hello. Don't be bashful. Say hey. Let's groove together.
You've actually been working some events this year, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's a yearly thing, you know, introducing acts and film introductions and that kind of thing. But it's what I love. So I've been chasing music since I was a wee Reuben. Bad French.
Well, adult Reuben Jackson hosts Friday Night Jazz on VPR. We have a link to the Burlington Discover Jazz Festival at vpr.net, where you can find all of the events and information. Reuben, what a pleasure. I always love talking with you.
Oh, thank you. Same here.
All right. Now, this morning, lawmakers gaveled open a session of the Vermont legislature, a special session. The reason? Governor Peter Shumlin vetoed a bill that deals with the siting of renewable energy projects. Going into today, it was an open question whether senators and representatives would override the veto, rewrite the bill over the course of the day, or let the veto stand. Tomorrow on Vermont Edition, we'll look at what happened in the special session and the bigger question of whether or not the governor and lawmakers have satisfied the demand of some towns and individuals that say they want more say in how and where Vermont decides to locate large solar and wind energy projects. You can join us for that discussion and add your own voice tomorrow at noon. Our producers are Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. We had production assistance from Haley Labonte Davey. Mary Williams directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.